So it's 9:03. Oh, we're 3 minutes late. What are you gonna do?
Catch up.
We'll formally call the Port Commission of the Port Authority of Houston to order. The first, I don't really have any chairman's response remarks other than welcome back from the summer, and here we are. We've had a lot of great things going on. Let's just get right into the meat of the meeting. So the item D, number
so
one.
Moved.
I'm sorry?
So moved.
Perfect. Perfect.
Thank you.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
There we go. Perfect. I love that. That, and we just caught up.
Yeah.
We're on schedule now.
There you go. Okay. So let, on D1 is the Audit Committee meeting that we had on July 29th. Staff presented to the Port Authority the second quarter 2019 financial statements, and highlights of the second quarter were the net position comprised primarily of infrastructure assets included increased to $1.58 billion as of June 30th, up 4% from 2018, along with a 6% increase in working capital to $441 million. Net position is basically your net assets minus liabilities. Second quarter 2019 net income was $55 million. It was a 12% increase over the same period of 2018 due to increased revenues from the container terminals. The committee also discussed the current assumptions and funding status of the defined benefit plan, pension and OPEB plans. The pension plan is 98.4% funded, while the OPEB reflects an 88% funded status. Both are considered well funded. Now, just to give you a sense, most, I think the numbers we saw were like, most pension funds are like 55 to 60, maybe, best case, with a pretty aggressive assumption. So I'm really excited about the port being so well funded for these items. The committee completed its annual review of our investment policy and internal controls for investments. Proposed changes included revisions to the list of approved financial institutions and added the Treasury, the Director of Treasury as an authority designee authorized to handle investments on behalf of the Port Authority. Committee concluded that the staff proposals and recommendations and recommends approval of the investment policy and internal controls for investments, and that will come up under agenda item H2. Staff proposed an amendment to our standard banking resolutions to add the Director of Treasury as the authorized agent with authority acting on behalf of the court related to those accounts and services at financial institutions, and also proposed adoption of the separate resolution relating to the investment accounts at Tex Pool and Tex Pool Prime. The committee recommends approval of those, and we'll present that in H1 and H3 when we get to those items. Internal audit updates. The advertisement of the non-attest, non-audit duties for the Chief Audit Officer. We reviewed the status of the Audit Committee calendar and responsibilities, reviewed the recent audit reports, including third-party hosted sites and sales tax compliance. Staff also provided the committee with a summary of items reported under the authority's whistleblower policy during the year through June of 2019. Any questions about the audit committee? It was perfect. Okay, so the pension and benefits committee was held on the 16th. Commissioner?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. The Pension Benefit Committee met on September 16, 2019. Grant Thornton, the outside auditors, presented plans for the 2019 restated retirement plan and financial statement audits. Staff then reported on performance for the second quarter of 2019 for the pension plan, OPEP trust, 457B deferred compensation plan, 401A defined contribution plan. As of June 30th, 2019, the pension plan had assets of $185.3 million, and the OPEP trust had assets of $76.4 million. During the last 12 months, the pension plan had a positive return of 5.8%, and the OPEP trust had a positive return of 5.7%, which were unfavorable compared to our benchmark of 6.9%, an actuarial assumption rate of 6.75%. This was due to the underperformance by the LMP manager, small cap value stocks, and the Causeway International Equity Fund. The expense ratio are favorable with annual savings of over $1.3 million combined versus average market fees. The pension plan remains well-funded with a ratio of 98.4% at the last valuation performed in 2018. The 401A and the 457B plans with Nationwide were restructured in February of 2019 to improve the quality of the investments, menus, and lower plan expenses. As of June 30th, 2019, Port employees had approximately 52.4 million in these two plans. Milliman Representative Jack Pringle reviewed the actuary assumption rate due to the lower expected investment returns of the pension and OPEB plans. Staff recommends reducing the actuary assumption rate from 6.75 to 6.50 and authorize additional funding of $5 million in the pension plan in connection with this reduction. The committee concurred with the proposed reduction in contribution amount included in today's agenda as item H4. Staff then reviewed changes to the Texas Government Code Chapter 802 that expanded reporting requirements and mandated adoption of a written funding policy for public retirement systems. Staff will be working with our consultants at Milliman and Co. Consulting to ensure compliance with the new regulations requirements. Staff reviewed Mercer's benefit valuation report, which benchmarked the competitiveness of the Port of Houston's pension plans. Mercer found that our total package, benefit package, compared favorably due to our strong activity and retirement medical plans. Opportunities identified for the improvement included our defined contribution plan, dental insurance, life insurance, short-term disability, and vacation policy. Finally, Lochtem Companies, Representative John Sims, discussed the self-insurance program experience to date, along with recommendations for the 2020 employee and retirement benefit program. The performance of our self-funded medical plan has been positive since inception in January of this year. Lochtem presented the request for proposed results and recommendation for benefit plan enhancements for 2020. The committee agreed with staff and Lochtem's recommendations for plan enhancements as reflected in item K1 on today's agenda. Future action for award of self-funded medical plan funding in 2020 and stop-loss insurance and third-party administrators for the medical plan. Thank you, Commissioners. This concludes the report of the Pension Benefit Committee.
Are there any questions, Commissioners, you have?
Okay, great. Mr. Chairman, I would like to commend our staff on our medical and benefit programs. You know, they just seem to do a great job, and our new medical, self-funded medical, appears to be headed in the right direction. They've done a lot of work, and I want to thank them for it.
I agree. The information they presented in the meeting was great. And in addition to the discussion that we had on benefits overall and how we need to expand some of those to make sure we continue to recruit the best and the brightest and retain our millennials, because you know how millennials are. They want a lot of stuff and want it now.
I wouldn't know.
So no, we have a lot of them, trust me.
So different from the baby boomers, right?
They're very different. Okay, so with that said, Commissioner Corgi is not here today, as you know, so I will go ahead and give his report from the Community Relations Committee. The Community Relations Committee met on September 16, 2019. Most of you know that because I think we have a committee of the whole there when you think about it. Staff provide an update on the Port Authority's comprehensive long-range plan and a specific focus. The port's connection to community. The following that discussion, Buffalo Bio Partnership provided the committee with an overview of their East End Sector Master Plan, which incorporates areas in and around the port's Turning Basin. In fact, on today's agenda, we have an item to support Buffalo Bio's master planning efforts in a way that will enhance and complete the port's own comprehensive long-range plan on connection to community. Two of this year's port Authority interns came back to present the group's summer project, which was restoring a community garden at Mission Milby, a community center located just south of the Turney Basin. The interns highlighted the planning and execution of the garden project, which included a Saturday planning event for the community members in the neighborhood. The project also provided Mission Milby with a sustainability plan so the garden could be the center point for ongoing community activities. Staff then provided an update on other recent volunteer events, including oyster reef restoration, preparing after-school meals at Houston Food Bank, and activities for Truckers Appreciation Week. Port Authority team also helped coordinate donations and transportation for 940-foot containers as part of the Port Community Donation Drive to assist the Bahamas relief effort. Additionally, Port employees also donated over $3,500 to assist these efforts. So the Port Authority would like to follow suit by supporting the Bahamas with a donation of $30,000. The donation will be made to one of our sister ports who's leading a coordinated large-scale effort. This is another item that you'll see on today's agenda. The meeting concluded with a year-to-date review of the Port's Promotion and Development Fund and a discussion of how to better maximize the fund in 2020 as we transition our new outreach strategies based on the recently completed and adopted community and stakeholder engagement policy. Any questions? Everybody was there, so cool. All right, so that will move on then to public comment. We have Mr. Joe Jennings, who is here from LaRouche and EIR. And Mr. Jennings, you have 3 minutes to,
1 minute.
Or 1 minute, sorry.
Unless you want to give more.
Three minutes.
Is it an item on the agenda? If it's not on the agenda, then.
Okay, got it.
Permission to record.
Sure.
In this room.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Well, in your hands is an excerpt of a soon-to-be-released special report called CO2 Reduction as Mass Murder Policy, issued by Executive Intelligence Review, which was founded by Lyndon LaRouche. This is intended to counter the lies and induced hysteria promulgated under the name of man-induced climate change. We got it out of New York yesterday when the Pied Piper of the Green Movement, Greta Thunberg, gave her rant in front of the United Nations. Now, there's not a speck of truth to the CO2 reduction argument. There is rather a fascist movement funded by a club of billionaires, which promotes this lie to cripple industrial civilization and reduce world population. Consider the threat tweeted around the world by Greenpeace USA when 11 fanatical protesters recently shut down the ship channel by suspending themselves from the Fred Hartman Bridge. Quote, "We are in Houston shutting down the largest oil export channel in the country. It's time to end the age of oil."
And your time is up, sir. Unless you want to.
The good news is that there is scientific truth. Houston is also the home to NASA, which is the agency which enables us to peer into the solar system and the galaxies where the real processes that govern climate change actually occur. With truth as our weapon, the LaRouche movement is recruiting young people away from this dark ages cult of green. This Saturday, our associates are hosting a public event with former NASA meteorologist, Tim Weissmuller, who will give you some of the science on this challenge the lies being promulgated by the green cults. So we invite everyone here to participate, and also you can purchase the entire report, of which you only have the excerpt, on the LaRouchePUB.com website. And I really thank you guys for the time, and I hope we can talk about this some more in the future.
Great, thank you. Any questions of commissioners? Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I'll move on to executive staff report. Roger.
Yes, Chairman, thank you. Just to briefly highlight, we didn't have the meeting in August, so just kind of want to report on the strength of the continued cargo activity across our public wharfs through August. Overall tonnage this year is up 7%. Container movements just shy of 2 million TEUs through August. Do the math, two-thirds of the year, we're gonna be bumping up against 3 million TEUs toward the end of the year. So very strong, up 11%. Steel continues to move strong, 3.2 million tons of steel, which is 6%. To kind of put that into context, you look over the last 30 years, An average year of steel is about 3 million tons a year, so it continues to be a strong year for steel imports. This business continues to drive solid financial results and tracking where we thought it would be on the budget. So it continues to be a solid year, and we forecasted very well and expect it to continue through the end of the year. I want to take just a moment to highlight John Mosley and I just returned from actually two visits. Annually, we go see our carriers in Asia, and then we just got back from Europe, where we are fortunate to meet with the top executives of our container lines, which are a big portion of the majority of our business at the port. And just a few takeaways at a high level. I think it was great to get in front of them to talk about what their view is going forward. They continue to reiterate that Houston's extremely important port to them. They're looking for opportunities to grow both on the import and export side. Obviously, there were the concerns on limitation on the size of the vessels, but I think it was good to get in front of them to talk about where we are and where we're going and the priority for deepening and widening the channel. They have the desire to continue to update, upsize their vessels to capture the market and indicate that the market opportunities in Houston are continuing to be strong. So we are committed. We got to stay in front of that. We can't let that happen. I heard more than once, from them that it's the BCO, those that are putting commodities in the containers, that are deciding where ships go these days. And we want to be the port of choice and be that one that continues to be competitive for them. So again, there was a lot of questions, but I think they appreciated the fact that John and I got in front of them and talked about the what's going on in Houston. So and at the same time, exploring other market opportunities. There's whether it's Trans-Pacific or North-South trade with Latin America or even Europe, those discussions and the desire to grow their business in Houston is quite healthy. So those are just a few takeaways. And Rick already mentioned, just a side note, I wanted to mention before I left, we had the effort with the impact, the devastation that it had on Dorian had on the port in the Bahamas. And before I left, our staff urged for opportunities to volunteer and to contribute to that effort. I'm just really proud of what they did. All I said was yes, go for it, and they rallied not only within our ranks at the Port Authority, but also with HEB and MSC and all of the stevedores and partners, many different community groups, to do what Rick said, load 9 containers of supplies to help out. And also they set up a portal where people could give money to the effort. So I'm just really proud of what our staff does and rallies together to volunteer to serve others. And the last thing, a little closer to home, after that, we all know that Tropical Storm Imelda kind of caught the region by surprise, and with the tremendous fury and flooding in the region, we shut down our container terminals on Thursday afternoon. But with the resolve of our great employees, we were able to open back up on Friday. There were, unfortunately, a number of our employees that were impacted due to the flooding, and had significant damage to their home and property. So we have the employee assistance program as well to help each other out, and we'll continue to do those things to help out our own in their time of need. So I appreciate, what our employees do, above and beyond what they do every day for work to reach out and help others. So that's all I have, Chairman. Good.
Any questions? Before we get into the meat of the meeting and authorizing, this the other items, I'd just like to back up a little bit and thank Commissioner Branch and Corgi for making the trip to Washington, D.C., not last week, but the week before. Mm-hmm. We are on a major program now of communicating to elected officials and to the community about deepening and widening the channel. I think I have 10 different civic organizations that I'm speaking to, 3 last week,
I'm doing two next week, and I have a fairly large calendar, so we will continue to promote the deepening and widening project, Project 11. I went to DC last week as well, and they were there the week before, and met with the Corps of Engineers staff, and General Semonite was not there, but he organized a very good meeting with his team that are actually reviewing and processing our chief's report through the Corps. We had a very good meeting with them. We also met with the chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, Congressman DeFazio, and Lizzie Fletcher, who's also on the committee, and then also Sheila Jackson Lee. Had an interesting connection with Chairman DeFazio in that his congressional district in Oregon, the 4th district in Oregon, actually covers the university that I actually attended, Oregon State University. So we had a lot of common friends, including the retiring president of Oregon State, and he was actually getting ready to go back and meet with him next week. So I made sure that the President Ray knew that we were meeting, and so we got some really interesting connectivity because of the Oregon connection with the chairman. And obviously the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee is where WERDA originates. So he was very supportive of making sure that that he really wants to get word out in 2020, and it's one of his major sort of goals for next year. The other big thing we talked about was the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund, and he's one of the biggest advocates of getting more dollars coming back to port regions from the federal government. We also met with the Vice President's office. And a gentleman from the Economic Development group that is part of the White House. So this is a strategy towards communicating about the need for the channel. We also had three enterprise folks that attended those meetings with us, Bob Sanders and their general counsel and other lawyer. The Targa folks were supposed to be there, but because of the storm, Vincent DeCosmo's daughter was getting married that weekend, so he made the right decision not to go. But so we had industry hand in hand with the port, and it was very important to make sure that people knew that we were a team, and we were all together trying to get this the deepening and widening message out to everyone who needs to know about that. So, any questions? Yes, go ahead.
In that same vein, as you said, the week before, Commissioner Corga and I were there. I had a chance to go to Piney Point, which is the Seafarers Academy, which is a big part of our maritime education program. Spend 2 days there, which was a really eye-opening experience. And I hope to work with Gilda and her team to get some of the school, the people who actually run those programs in Yates and Austin High School, Galena Park, Pasadena High Schools, to do a tour of that facility, because it's just amazing. It's an amazing facility. The young people that are there that are getting training in maritime professions is just an outstanding facility and operation that the seafarers operate there in Piney Point. And in terms of the legislative stuff, Dean and I had the opportunity to speak with Secretary Perry, mm-hmm. who basically said that the Port of Houston is one of his priority projects, and that he is pushing from his end to make sure that our interests are being heard and served in D.C. Chairman Benny Thompson, who's chairman of Homeland Security, who is going to be here in Houston next month, we invited to come out to the port. And so we got a chance to meet with several representatives, Eddie Bernice, who sits on the Water mm-hmm. Committee. And so we had a great, great meeting as well, making sure that they know that the number one priority for the Houston Ship Channel is the deepening and widening project. And so I think we had a pretty good couple of weeks in D.C. between our combined efforts.
Great.
Thanks.
And we need to keep pushing it. There's no question about it in terms of making sure everyone understands that it's not just for Houston, it's for the nation. And we made sure people understood that it was a national security issue and an economic development issue for not just the region, but the country overall. So
absolutely.
Great. Okay, let's move on to some general items to start with. Item number F1 is...
Didn't have any appearances?
I'm sorry? No.
Just the one.
Just the one. We're done on appearances, yes. The item one is to rescind the Port Commission resolution adopted on April 8th, 2019 and amended on April 23rd, 2019 regarding limitations on ships calling to Port, Port Authority container terminals. Given the legislation that took effect on September 1st, this is moot. So is there a motion to rescind it?
Motion.
Second.
Any questions or comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Great. Okay, number two authorize a challenge grant service agreement with the Severe Storm Prediction Education and Evacuation from Disasters, or SPEED, Center at Rice University to assist the further developing of Galveston Bay Park Plan Storm Surge Defense System in the amount of $250,000 contingent upon securing additional grant funding totaling $750,000. We're going to talk about this more specifically, but I would like Jim Blackburn to, Jim, there you go. Would you come up and just give us a couple of minutes and talk a little bit about your joint press release that was done with the Corps and give us an update on...
Sure. The SPEED Center has been working really since Hurricane Ike on various alternatives to come up with protection for the both the industrial complex and primarily the western shoreline of Galveston Bay. The original funding we worked under was from Houston Endowment. Over the years, we have basically begun to focus on in-bay solutions. And recently, the Corps of Engineers and the General Land Office of the State of Texas determined that the in-bay solution, the Galveston Bay Park Plan that we're pursuing, is compatible with the coastal spine that the Corps of Engineers is pursuing, and basically made the determination that both could proceed and not be in competition for funding or for basically duplication of resource and duplication of efforts. The funding that we are seeking here today is a start on the work that needs to be done to basically develop the engineering specs and to come up with much better environmental and economic documentation. The basic idea is that this would be constructed under permit. It would be a permit filed by local governmental entities, possibly the port, possibly Harris County, possibly a combination, and that would be done in coordination and complementary to the Corps of Engineers work. I've met with the Corps. The permit section is in full understanding. Project 11, which you're pursuing, will not be involved in any way with this. We are looking to widen the ship channel from the 700 that you're seeking with Project 11 to either 800 or 900, depending on the amount of dredge material that's necessary. And we plan to build the structures along the edge of the ship channel to protect the western shoreline. So basically, it's a possibly a device or a concept to expand the widening of the ship channel all the way to the full 900 feet. It is a multiple project in the sense that it's navigation, it's flood protection. We're building the levees or proposing the levees to 25 feet, which is a significant level of protection. Even with the coastal spine in place, there is sufficient water in Galveston Bay to generate about a 20-foot surge on the western shoreline, which is a significant problem. And that's where the complementary aspect came up. And it's really about protecting the western shoreline, even with the coastal spine.
So this capital, the $1 million that we're talking about here, 250 as a, 250,000 as a challenge grant from the port. So you're gonna use this capital for engineering design work that has to be done to sort of bring more math into the project?
That's correct. The Corps of Engineers basically have said that certainly for permitting purposes, much more engineering detail is necessary. And our costs are significantly less than the Corps perhaps thinks they should be. They would like to see more detailed engineering as well. And I think all of us would. So that's really the purpose, but it potentially is a low-cost solution.
And then walk us through your strategy to raising the other $750,000.
Well, we have a plan. It's like a lot of other plans. It's good until you get started. I think the basic concept is what we think that Harris County may well contribute. We think that the oil and gas industry may well contribute. We've talked to Rice University. They may put up some money on this. We have a promise of for example, the governor's mansion over here at Morgan's Point to be used for a fundraiser. So we have multiple sources. I was at the General Land Office yesterday. The General Land Office is open to receiving a grant request. So we see pulling together many different sectors within the community, none of whom have committed yet. It's sort of like this would be the first step, and then we'll see how the other steps come along. I think we're confident that we can raise the $750,000, if not more, but it's very important to get the first commitment, and that would be very important today.
And then I understand from staff, Roger and Eric, that you would have an agreement that details the conditions of the challenge grant and what dollar, and you'd have you would make sure that dollars were going to engineering and projects related to that Speed Center is talking about, correct? There'd be an agreement that you would have as part of that?
There would have to be an agreement. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah. All right, and I mean, that's consistent. I mean, we're clear at Speed Center that this is not a research project.
Got it.
This is a design project at this stage. The earlier work generated PhDs and master's students, and that's not going to be the case with this part of the work.
Great, and just to emphasize the issue that this is not in any, the Gallison Bay Park project, it does not have any connection to or part of or any relationship to Project 11.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, Jim, you know, we've been working a long time. And first of all, let me say this. Your project's very important to this community, and I understand that. We've been working a very long time trying to get to the point where we can widen this channel. And we've been talking about 700 foot. Now you come in with a new proposal. Is that going to delay us getting done what we need to do? I personally have a concern if we got to go back through all this process again and our project gets pushed aside.
No, sir. This will be done under permit. The Project 11 is a federal project. The permit application won't be filed for at least a year, assuming that there is a sponsor to go for it. This is just really to do the detailed design work at this time. The timing of the permit application, should that be the case, would be totally negotiable based upon the status of Project 11. But the Corps, in the discussions we had in working up the compatibility, it's very clear that this is not part of Project 11, that this is a separate and standalone project. And I honestly don't think that there's a problem with interference with the Project 11 progressing. We have been very careful. That was sort of the word one from both Roger and Rick is, you know, don't foul up Project 11 with any of your thinking. And we've been very, very cognizant of that and have tried to work with that as best we can. And I think that we come up with an approach that allows Project 11 to be here. And all of this work is over here. And right now, there's nothing formal that would be filed with the Corps. This is just design work.
Okay. So, Jim, you talked about the expansion of what we're looking at doing in the widening process. And so my question would be, and for future reference, if we're, you know, and it probably won't be any of us, but you know, somewhere down the road, 10, 15 years, you know, we have to do an additional widening. How does that affect what you're talking about in terms of your expansion?
Well, I don't think it would affect it at all. I mean, the widening we're talking about would be to 900 feet, assuming at some point you wanted to go to 1,100 feet or something like that. Basically, we're right in line with where your existing disposal areas are.
Okay.
So basically, the current disposal areas have 25-foot berms along the ship channel side. They're just not legally, kind of technically, they're not levees, but they are already, you know, you already have in place 25-foot berms in, you know, along the edge of the channel. This would be an extension of that.
Okay.
And in all cases, there is the other side of the channel where the expansion would take place, and then the, in this case, the east side for the most part, would be used for the disposal and for the building of the levees. So I think it would be totally compatible with all types of future expansion. Thank Plus, you. It provides you with disposal capacity in the future.
Jim, who's going to do this study?
The work will be done by Walter P. Moore Engineering Company, led by Joe Sieber, who used to be head of McClelland Engineers. Speed Center would have the contract. Phil Bedient and Clint Dawson, University of Texas, will do the computer modeling that's necessary for flood flows, trying to make sure that we're compatible with stormwater runoff and with the operation of the gates. And there will also be community outreach pieces of this as well, and that will be done probably by outreach strategists, as we're currently thinking of it.
So if we give you $250,000, do we get it back if you can't raise the other $750,000?
Absolutely. I don't think I get the money until I get the $750,000.
No. It's a challenge grant, which says they don't get the money if they don't raise the other money, right?
Oh, yes, sir, you do.
Is there a sponsor on this? Who's going to be the sponsor of it?
In terms of the actual, you're talking about the permit application or the work? There is no sponsor yet for any permit application. This is just an authorization funding for design work. All decisions about permit applications would have to be made in the future.
I have a few, you know, if you guys, is I know that offshore under the bay is Chambers County. Is that where this is going to be constructed, in Chambers County?
Partially in Chambers, partially in Galveston County.
Okay. Have y'all, and former mayor of Baytown, I know that all of the coastal communities there are extremely interested in surge protection because we've all experienced it. Have y'all consulted with the local governments that would be affected by this project on both the West Bank and in Baytown?
Beginning to do that, we have to some extent. I think it's fair to say that we developed a concept, and at one point we weren't even sure that there was anyone that was interested. But that's our plan, is to reach out and to work with that. We've had some limited discussions with other counties so far, more discussions within the county, and more to occur. Harris County has passed a resolution to authorize the county attorney to move forward. Commissioner Garcia is holding a meeting tomorrow with some of the mayors. So these meetings, these reach outs, these discussions are certainly underway and will be a major part of going forward.
You're aware that most of East Harris County mayors and cities have endorsed the so-called Ike plan.
That's correct.
How's this going to affect the Ike plan? You're trying to say it's not going to affect, it's going to be compatible.
That's correct.
How's it going to become so compatible? Is it basically the same?
Well, basically, if you look at the Corps' plan for the coastal spine, they have a Dickinson Bayou and a Clear Lake portion, which are basically barriers that are about $1 billion each. And those are to keep surge water that is generated within the bay. There's enough water in Galveston Bay with the spine in place to generate about a 20-foot to 22-foot surge simply within the bay, even if you blocked off the Gulf. And that is what, if you look at the Corps plan, they've got non-structural alternatives from the area from 146 to the bay. And then they've got the Clear Lake, and they've got the Dickinson Bayou proposals. We can basically provide a better protection internally within the bay system with the Galveston Bay Park plan than the Corps is providing right now. And I think that's where the compatibility determination really came from. It would allow them to not spend that money and to basically save money there and to provide a higher level of protection than they can provide right now.
Saving money because you're doing it instead of them? Is that what you're saying?
That would be one basis for it. The other would be that it just covers more comprehensively the area. But yes, they wouldn't have to spend the $2 billion.
Which has been my experience since I've been here, that it's real easy to get the Corps to go along with anything as long as you pay for it.
Well, I think that might be a clue to how to work with the Corps.
The old rule, who has the gold rules.
But I think that's really, frankly, one thing that I think you are probably seeing that as well with some of the widening issues that you're running across. But yes, I think you can do that. And I think that the compatibility determination was something that, I mean, there had been always the belief that we were fighting with the Corps, and that simply wasn't the case. There were just different approaches, and they, I think, have been, we have found them a way to make them work together, and I think it'll be to the benefit of everyone to have these options on the table. I think that really the only issue remaining is which gate to build, and, you know, the big gates. And both have big gates in the plan. And the Corps and GLO, and we have discussed, there may only be a need for one big gate rather than two.
Jim, have y'all had any discussions with the Coastal Spine group, the sponsors, about your project and how it is compatible? I mean, are they good with it, or?
I mean, to the extent that the Corps and the GLO are the Coastal Spine sponsors, absolutely.
Well, isn't it also very unusual for the Corps to come out and make a statement like they did?
I have never seen that in 40 years.
That it was compatible. Usually, it's, you know, it's not a Corps project, so, and there's not enough math and engineering around it for anybody to argue whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. It's a great concept, right?
It's a concept.
You need to prove the concept through real, you know, engineering work and design, and that's what this $1 million is designed to do.
And that basically gets it to the point where you make a decision about going forward with the permit application or not.
Right. Okay. Any other questions?
Just want to have we invested? I don't recall. Have we invested any money in the Coastal Spine project?
We haven't. They've not asked for any. They've done it on their own. Okay. I know Pasadena endorsed that one.
Right.
And so
I have a problem with
they haven't asked
because of that reason without talking to them. I'm not going to be able to support it at this time for that reason. I know all of East Harris County mayors pretty well have endorsed the other one.
Well, this is not about endorsing one or the other. This is about, and especially since the Corps and the GLO have said it was compatible. I know that Harris County and Commissioner Garcia is very supportive of this piece of the equation. The question is, ultimately, we don't have enough information or communication to know whether the project really ultimately can be viable. And this what this does is it provides the seed capital to go out and raise other funds to be able to then, in fact, do the engineering so that you can have viable conversations with mayors and just the community in general. But today, if you look at the book that has been put together, it's awesome, but what's underneath the math that tells you actually it is 3 to 5 billion? It really does what the concepts think it does, and that's what this $1 million is. So, you know, I think I really think the project just needs to move forward, and we're one of the few entities that can actually has capital to do things like this, and we're putting the onus on Jim and his centers back to go get the other 750, and then we'll play. So if he can't convince the rest of the industry or the rest of the community to do that, obviously Houston Endowment's already funded part of it, which is a pretty big vote of confidence to start with, because they're very rigorous in how they analyze where they're going to put their money. So that's why I think it's a reasonable project for us to fund and give him the first sort of commitment, and then let him go get the rest of the money.
Well, I'm kind of like Roy. My main, this has been a real source of contention in East Harris County, mm-hmm, for quite some time, as far as how best to protect the channel, how best to protect the communities along the bay. There have been numerous discussions with local officials about various options, some of which the community supported, some of which they did not. And this is not the Centennial Gate. I fully realize that, Jim. I guess my very much reluctance to commit $250,000 of the port's money is that there has not been, to my knowledge, discussion amongst the people that are on the ground that are going to be affected, who's, you know, in this. I would really like for some of the local governments along the channel that are going to be affected by this to at least weigh in or be informed and educated before we commit a lot of money to the project. I mean, it may be great. I mean, I'm hoping it's great. Obviously, the more protection we can give to the communities, the better off we are, because, you know, I've seen what a storm surge did to the western side of my city, and it ain't pretty. And so I'm just right now I'm not able to support it.
The thing that for me, the issue that I've had with a lot of folks when we talked about this issue is they don't have enough data yet. When you talk to the Corps, and I asked General Semonite the question, and the previous colonel of the district who's now been replaced by Colonel Vale, and they said, you know, they don't have enough information to opine one way or another on whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, because there's not enough engineering yet. And so to me, for something that, and this is really a Port Houston issue more than a West Side issue for me, because ultimately, if you have a 20-foot surge coming up the channel, it's the biggest environmental disaster in American history, probably. And so for the reason I think it's important to do this is that this is a small amount of money on a relative basis to multi-billion-dollar projects to get it to the point where you actually can go to a mayor or a community group and say, here's the math that says this actually does work. And the fact that you have the GLO and the Corps give their sort of green light, if you will, on compatibility, not one or the other, or this is going to negatively impact Project 11, or the fact that it's going to negatively impact the spine. It's not that. This is about simply moving forward with enough information and giving them the incentive to go out and raise money from third parties. The only way they're going to get the additional $750,000, remember our $250,000 is just a challenge grant for them to get the $750,000. They're going to have to convince the community and other funders, including Harris County and others, to write checks. And so we're not at risk until they actually get the $750,000. And so to me, that puts the onus on the Speed Center and Jim and his teams back to go out and convince the community that they're willing to write checks to support this. So, you know, if we were just writing a blank check for $250,000, it'd be one thing. But to me, he needs a little jump start of capital from a constituent group that has a lot of skin in the game, which is the port. And that's why I put it on the agenda and I wanted to move forward. I agree totally with you, with both commissioners on the issue that we have to have support ultimately from the communities that surround the port. But to me, as long as he doesn't negatively impact Project 11, as long as they can raise the additional capital and build the support with the communities that you're interested in and that should be interested in this, then our capital is simply his way to his ability to have those conversations and ultimately move forward. That's why I think it's an important thing to vote for. So,
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I just want to say that the surrounding cities, for as long as I've been around, has supported the Port of Houston and mm-hmm. everything we tried to do, permit processes and everything else. I just think that, like these two commissioners are saying, we should hear from them. I think we owe it to them to hear their side and what they prefer also. And I'm not saying I'm opposed to it, but I'm saying I think we ought to table it and hear the other stories and then make a decision.
Or could Jim go back and get from those other constituents groups a sign-off to basically
that's good with
before
me.
He comes up here.
And then,
I was going to say, we get to write the agreement, so can we do some kind of stair-step comfort in that agreement?
Go to the different cities and get. I cannot help and think that they was probably acceptable to this thing, but I know
you're not asking them to be accepted.
I hear from them,
I'm because there's not much to accept at this point other than a concept, right?
Yeah, it's a study. I mean, it's basically a study that they will be able
to
then use.
So, what are you what do you want him to bring back?
We want him to come back and say he's met with the outer cities and everybody supports his what he's doing.
And I think they would.
Is that?
And the outer cities are what specific cities?
Pasadena,
what's in that group?
Seabrook, those different cities
LaPorte,
that are involved.
LaPorte, Baytown, the ones that's involved, who's Baytown, always supported us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just the respect to talk to them and have them join you in what you're trying to do.
these two groups were together a long time ago, and they were pushing one way or the other. Ultimately, our city supported the ACDAC situation, as most of the other cities did. Now we've got the same program coming back again, so I think they should go back and sell their program to the city, too, which they should be able to do.
Maybe we could do one of the commissioners make a motion to approve this subject to the city's getting city support from the cities that we're talking about. And then that he will have not only a commitment from the port subject to, so now it's subject to two things. One is the $750,000, and then two is support from the cities that are in and around the port.
I prefer to defer it because I don't want to put the city in the position of him going to him and saying that the port's already approved this.
Subject to your approval.
I think it's put the horse in front of the cart or cart in front of the horse. I think he should simply take another, we don't meet for another month. He's got plenty of time to do it and bring the issue back up. That gives me a chance and opportunity to visit with my city.
Okay. Well, my guys.
And your guys. I just feel like I'm not in the position to support it at this time. Not saying I'm not for it.
Right.
Okay. Jim, can you do that in the next 30 days?
I will do that, and hopefully we'll be back with approval. Yeah. I'm more than happy to do that. Again, it is even the little bit that you've said, though, gives me a basis for going that I didn't have previously. Okay.
Should we arrange the forum for interested cities and you to sit down and meet?
Absolutely.
Why don't we do that? Yeah. So let Roger and team set up the forum so that you have a platform to talk to those folks, and we'll do that in the next 30 days and bring it back.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds perfectly good. Thank you very much.
There's not a problem. There's a meeting tomorrow that Commissioner Garcia has arranged, and I think that could be one of the.
Well, I was going to say Mayor Bechtel is the current head of the Harris County Mayor and Councils.
That'd be a venue.
That'd be a good venue for it.
That makes really good sense. Yeah.
All right.
Happy to do so.
Okay,
thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Okay. Item number three is consideration of possible action to approve the amended port authority.
So do we need a motion to table this? Or?
No. Okay. We just leave it off.
Okay.
I don't think you have to.
We didn't even have a motion.
No motion.
Okay.
So
table
that. Item three is the vendor protest procedure. Tom, you're going to walk us through that?
Yeah, basically the way it was previously set up is that you had to file a protest within 7 days of the award of a contract, yet you could ask for a debriefing for 90 days.
Right.
So that's kind of a little backwards.
Yeah.
So we're just going to change the time frame where you still have the 90 days for a debriefing, and then you get another 10 days to file a protest after the debriefing.
Okay. Right. Is there a motion?
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, item number four. This is the appointment of our new commissioner to her chosen committees, Compensation Committee and the Procurement and Small Development Task Force. Is there a motion?
Motion.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
And by the way, Commissioner, you're welcome to come to every committee meeting.
Yeah.
All the committee meetings are open.
And expected. I think rookies are expected to.
I've been here.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, number five is approve the donation to the South Carolina Port Authority to help support the Hurricane Dorian relief efforts and not to exceed $30,000. Your motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, item six is the approval of an agreement with the Buffalo Bio Partnership to support community-focused master planning efforts in the vicinity of the Port Authority's Turning Basin Terminal in conjunction with Buffalo Bio Partnership's East End Sector Plan and in an amount not to exceed $100,000. This item was approved by the Community Relations Committee as a whole, since everybody was there. Is there a motion?
Second.
Go ahead.
Question. Mr.
Yes.
Chairman.
Yes.
Since we did this the other day, I've heard a lot of rumors that these folks actually didn't come ask us for any money. We just did it. I want to make sure that's clear.
No, they asked us for money. I think what they did was they were under the impression that we were going to like talk about it without them in the room. And so I think Ann left the room without kind of being formal in what she was trying to do. But they what they're doing is the master plan that they did was $1.5 million master plan, and it stopped before it got to the turning basin. And right. And their master plan is amazing. And this $100,000 was to bring the master plan down into the turning basin and connect the dots there.
I just want to make sure the rumors don't get out there. We give money away.
No. They were very specific in their ask. I think there was confusion in the meeting because Ann thought she was going to talk. She thought we wanted to talk about it without her there. Okay. So she left the room before she kind of made the formal question, formal request. And I was sort of surprised by that too. But no, the request was at the beginning, and this was all part of the presentation.
Okay.
Right.
Both of them.
Okay.
Motion.
Second.
And as a reminder, this is the one I'm abstaining on.
Yes.
My husband's on the executive board.
Right.
Just for transparency.
Yep. Right. Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm going to tell you didn't vote for
me. There you go. Okay, right. Okay, we're going to move on to G. We're removing items two and three from consideration. And so, John, you want to come up and talk to us about what you got here?
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, commissioners. Welcome back from a hot summer, kind of a wet summer. It's basically the start of the season, echoing what Roger just discussed regarding our recent trips. It's the start of the season for ocean carriers and their network planning and fleet deployment efforts for the following year. And it was a solid trip. My colleague here, Jeff's going to have some announcements that kind of come forward with new services that were in the planning stage several months ago and now are coming to fruition here at the port. I've got several items, but there's two that I'd like to draw your attention to today. The first one is G1. Basically, in July, we had initiated an RFP for promotional items and actually a request for advertising for promotional items and web store ordering a program. There were 32 companies that had downloaded the information through BuySpeed. We only had 5 responses, of which only one was a small business. So we believe we've got some work to do to kind of improve that process and maybe go out. So we're requesting to reject proposals and press the restart button on that. That's G1. G4 is a request to approve $65,000 for membership and sponsorship of the Retail Industry Leaders Association for 2020. Again, echoing Roger's comments at the start of the meeting, shippers play a critical role in driving carrier decision-making in terms of capacity and fleet deployment. And being a member of the Retail Industry Association has brought great benefits to us in engagement with shippers in order to drive and support business at the port. And that's all I have for today. I could take questions if you have any.
Commissioners, any questions?
No questions.
If not, we'll take items 1, 4, 5, and 6. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Okay. We have finance up next. Tim is, I think, at the commissioner's court today.
Correct.
Talking about infrastructure.
Me.
Okay, Tom.
So you've already talked about all 4 of these in the committee highlights. Mm-hmm. So 1, 2, and 3 are just basically changing the designated authority agents mm-hmm. for either the bank or our investment policy or text pool. Mm-hmm. The 4th one is the previously discussed pension, where we are dropping the assumption, the actuarial assumption rate from 6.75 to 6.50, which makes us a very strong, continues a strong pension, and also to fund the difference when you make that change, there's obviously gonna be some money that has to be put into the fund. So that's the $5 million that was discussed earlier.
Okay. Is there a motion for
items 1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Question?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Question.
Yeah.
Tom,
As it relates to you add, do we add a position here? Director, I saw where.
Ray Yee, who is the senior director of Treasury, is planning on retiring soon. Okay. So this is his replacement that we've just brought on so that he could work with Ray for a while.
Okay, so.
So he's not going to be a senior director. He's going to be a director.
Okay, so we're just, we're adding.
Adding that position. We don't add names. We add position.
Position. Title. So we're adding that position as.
Yeah, and then when Ray leaves, we'll come back to you and take the senior director off.
Okay. Well, we're not going to let Ray leave.
Well, we've tried, but he's insisted that he's going to Florida. He doesn't care what
his wife's doing. Already packed the furniture.
Yeah, she's already gone.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor, 1 through 4. Please say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay, great. Okay, infrastructure, Rich.
Good morning, Commissioner and Chairman and Commissioners. We have.
No, you broke it.
What is that?
Now it is.
It is now.
It's
like
now it is.
Different colors. Okay.
Halloween.
I'm not sure what it is.
Let's talk about it.
We have 16 items on the agenda for infrastructure today, totaling about $6.6 million in capital requests, and plus approving Porsche receipt of about $4 million, which includes $572,000 in grants and about $3.6 million in submerged land leases over a 10-year period. Perhaps the most significant item is I-2, which is a request to authorize the port to proceed with critical path items in the design of the Houston Ship Channel. We've talked about this Project 11 and the sense of urgency that we have to conduct. We're looking at the Chief's report next spring and the WERDA approval next summer or fall, but in order to be ready to dig dirt, per se, the day after we get authorization and money, we want to have the design ready. That design is very complex. I want to particularly point out Charlie Jenkins. I want to thank him and the entire team for keeping the foot on the gas pedal to get these things done, because if we don't prepare the design, which could take a year, we won't be ready by the time we get the authorization. So the design itself is 30 different major activities, from defining, you know, where and how you're going to dredge material, where and how you're going to dispose of it, environmental concerns, and so forth. So not all of those items are ready to contract yet, but some of the ones that many of the activities depend on, like understanding the subsurface, understanding the actual dirt, the clay, so that we can do the design effectively, that's a critical path item. So this involves hiring basically drilling rigs and surveys to understand the subsurface and provide that data into the engineering process. And that total is in reflected in the item there, $5.5 million as a not to exceed number.
So Rich, this is our pre-portion of the deepening, widening, engineering, as a part of the whole engineering piece. Absolutely. That's going to go along with deepening and widening.
It is getting ahead of the curve so that we're ready to dig dirt as soon as we get the permission.
Okay.
To do so. There's a number of other items. I'll put them in buckets. Four of them have to do with construction and assets. There's an installation of security systems. There's three items that have to do with change orders. Those change orders reflect about 2% of the total value of the contracts associated with them. I can go into those details as needed. There are a number of, there's about three items that are environmental in nature. $106,000 contract to support reviewing our Bayport permit, which is up for renewal next year. $100,000 contract to keep an eye on a property that is being abandoned by GB Biosciences. $45,000 for renewing our metro leases. And there are a couple in operations, which Jeff will get into, having to do with LEDs and electric vehicles. There are two items that have to do with receiving grants. One is for $52,000 or $72,000, which is in support of those electric vehicles. That's being provided by HGAC through a Pasadena refining fund that they had to provide. And then the second is a $500,000 grant which follows the work we've already done with TCEQ to look at emissions reduction strategy. And this would be to implement one aspect of that, which is to move to electric yard mills and test out that technology. And finally, there's three barge fleeting leases covering about 120 acres. This is implementing the policy that the Port Commission approved back in 2017. That will net the port about $3.6 million over 10 years.
Rich, do you have any information as it relates to the barge that hit the bridge?
We know where the barges came from and who owned them. They came from a fleeting area called Cheryl K, and they're owned by Kirby.
Canal Barge Company owns.
Canal Barge,
Canal,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Kirby owns the property.
Kirby owns the, where they were moored, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they have a permit with us?
They had, I think the fleeting area had a construction permit. It does not have the lease is still in negotiation, to my knowledge. And the people who actually own those barges are in negotiation for another fleeting area to get out of that particular fleeting area.
What's the deal on the Superfund site that is connected to that? And were there any spillage from that site?
No, we have not heard anything in that regard.
Okay. One of the barges hit it.
One of the barges hit it, right?
Ran aground on it.
Right.
EPA has contacted us, and they're proceeding to investigate. But this time, it doesn't appear that that's an issue. Thankfully.
Okay.
Ultimately, that material is going to be taken away.
Right. Exactly. But I remember seeing that it was caved in and was concerned there was possibly some spillage from that site into the water there. So.
Well, I looked at all the areas here, and none of them are north. None of these particular leases are in that area.
In that area, okay.
So they're all south of the affected area. I'm still concerned about permits for leases south, immediately south of that bridge, because Alicia put a barge within 10 feet of that bridge.
Well,
it was storm surge, so I.
Commissioner, I can tell you that staff actually met. Yes, I mean We appreciate the urgency of reviewing this. We actually met yesterday at length to, come up with some proposals as to how to, make sure something like this doesn't happen again. To the extent it's within our power to do that.
Yeah, it seems like we could perhaps look at the language in our leases to get some assurance and our penalties. Mm-hmm.
Just what we're doing, and I think there's also some coordination with TxDOT. What our information is that there were protective devices that TxDOT had secured, and they were not necessarily as effective as, I'll just say they weren't as effective as they should have been, and that's, I think, something has to be addressed as well.
Seems like to me like you say you put something in the lease that make a better protection south to prevent exactly what happened.
Right. And again, we're already talking about
it. We
already talked about
it. It's got a profound effect on not only the general public, which is pretty profound, but the national commerce and the port.
Yeah, exactly.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Not to mention the port people have to commute.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure. Okay, do we have a motion to take items I-1 through 16?
Motion. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. Jeff, you're up.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. We have, this is red, I think my time is up.
No, that would be.
We have a dozen items for your consideration this morning, and before moving on to the agenda, I'd like to highlight a new service, that's begun calling Bayport. Kudos to John and his group for the heavy lifting trying to recruit new business. It's the TP-88 Pelican is an all-water agent service operated by the 2M and Zim lines. 2M already had an agent service calling Bayport, and Zim had a small feeder service that they fed us boxes from Asia through Kingston, so that Kingston feeder is going away, but this is going to result in new capacity to Asia into Bayport. This will be our fourth all-water agent service, fastest growing trade lane.
And we had to do a few things strategically. We negotiated with 2M to move a service from Bayport to Barber's Cut, a North Europe service, to kind of keep that balance between the terminals. That's a constant challenge for us, working inside of those two configurations. About 60% of our business is at Bayport, and the remaining 40% is at Barber's Cut, obviously. And the first ship was September 15th. It was a 4,400 TEU ship to Northern Gill, and it had 1,800 lifts to start with. So that's a really good indicator that it started that strong. Now I'll move on to the agenda. We've got a dozen items, but I'll only highlight a few. Take questions, comments about anything. But we'll start with J1. That's a recommendation to award for 3-ship shore cranes at $35 million. We have several things that kind of work with this award, and I want to take a second to highlight those. The Bayport Channel is wider than the Barber's Cut Channel, so therefore the size vessels that are allowed to call the two facilities are different. So at a very high level, we are recommending strengthening the dock, the Barber's Cut Dock 3 and Bayport Dock 4 and 5, to accommodate larger cranes at both facilities. And this award is for Bayport 5, and when Barber's Cut 3 is ready, we want to shift 3 cranes from Bayport to Barber's Cut. They're older, they're smaller cranes, still have plenty of functionality and can fit that channel and that business well. With the new cranes, with our new configuration into Bayport 3. We'll also come back and ask, so we're gonna come back later and ask to improve the dock at 5 at Bayport. We're gonna ask to shift the cranes from Bayport to Barber's Cut, and we're gonna ask to demo 2 cranes at Barber's Cut. A little bit about the configuration of these cranes. They are suited for 18,000 TEU vessels, and we know that those ships are not calling today, but these cranes will have a lifespan of somewhere between 30 and 40 years, and we believe that there's opportunity to have that vessel sometime in the future. And just a little bit about that height. Underneath the boom of that crane, it's about 190 feet, and underneath the bar that goes up and down and lifts, 190 feet from the boom to the water. And underneath the bar, it's 158 feet from the bar to the water. So in essence, the Fred Hartman Bridge is 175 feet tall. We can boom the crane down over the Fred Hartman Bridge and almost get containers off of it, but it's that tall.
You get protesters off.
Yeah. We could easily do that with our fire boats.
Anyway, a lot of activity there, managing the cranes and the size of the cranes to prepare for the future and the fleet that we have today. I'd like to skip down to J3. This is one of really highly technical piece here. It has to do with a GPS system. And a GPS system provides automatic updates of container locations in the container yard as cranes are handling them. And currently our ILA operators, they sit in the crane and they're fed instructions via a computer in the cab. So, I laugh at Tom. I tell Tom, he was running the crane. He'd move the box and then he'd find his glasses and he'd put it on and then he'd update the computer system, tell the operating system what he did with those boxes. And that's the part that we're trying to take away with the position detection system. So the PDS uses a location grid and it tracks the cranes through the yard. And the cranes know when they pick up a box and they set it down and those kind of things. So we'll get 2 new efficiencies out of this. We'll take about 30 seconds without eliminating any manning, same manning. We'll eliminate about 30 seconds out of those 4-minute transactions that our operators deal with every time they deal with a road box. And also, we give the operators instructions about where to put boxes. They don't always follow that. So put it in C3, maybe they put it in C4. When it happens, that box, we can't find it. So I've worked here a long time. We've never lost one, but we've misplaced them frequently. And it takes time. And it's safety effort to go in the stacks and find those containers. So this is a big improvement that as the crane is performing moves, it'll update the operating system. The operator can concentrate on his activities and not updating the operating system.
Is this software or hardware?
It's a little of both. Okay. It's a little of both. There'll be antennas. There'll be a grid set up so that there are antennas on the cranes and it's tracking its location through the yard across this grid. Mm-hmm. And it'll communicate via our existing Wi-Fi network to update the operating system. Crane says, I just dropped a box in this location. And this system says that crane is located at this coordinate in the yard.
Okay. Great.
No changes in manning, but a lot of efficiencies here. As we do about 10,000 moves today, about 6,000 of them are handled by the RTGs. And so that's about 30 seconds per move throughout the day that operators are updating the operating system. So I think this is a tremendous, has a tremendous opportunity to be more efficient and to create a safer environment, keeping our people out of stacks looking for lost boxes. And finally, I'll move down to J-12. Rich touched on this a minute ago. The environmental folks are always, we're excited to try to work with and make sure we do things as environmentally sensitive in the best way we can do it. So these are for 5 electric vehicles for us to, as Rich mentioned, we got a grant to do most of this activity, and we're going to get these 5 vehicles and do some testing to see if they meet our needs and maybe as in the future grow our fleet of electric vehicles. So certainly worth mentioning. And with that, I'll take questions about these items or any of them on the office.
You know how many electric vehicles we're currently running in terms of
zero.
Trucks?
Zero.
We don't have any trucks or no. That are okay.
We've done some things.
Yeah,
in the
we've
past
tried it in the past stuff. And it really didn't work. And so now with the new technology, we want to try it again. And we're starting with the pool cars this time.
Yeah, it's pool cars.
We had a hybrid.
We've had hybrids in the past.
Jeff, do you happen to know right off hand what is our percentage of Asian cargo today?
John, what's that number? Yeah, well, it's about 40%. It's
40%.
It's been changing. Changing lately.
I was thinking it was 35, but it is 40.
China has been the leading driver of our business.
Right.
It's actually down double digits, and it's been replaced by Vietnam and other Southeast Asian ports. So it's been this shift, but it's all Asia transport.
Yeah, it's 40%. It's moved to Vietnam. Right?
Okay, thank you.
Just big picture in terms of procedure. I mean, like on these big ticket items, do you know and have an idea in the beginning of the year, are we told, you know, we're going to have 6 million, 5 million,
yes.
2 million?
Yes, in the capital.
Part of the budget process.
You will hear that at the November budget meeting.
Okay.
And is there a motion to approve items 1 through 12?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. So now move on to Jessica.
Hi.
Let's see you.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. I have a few items that I'd like to brief you on related to people provision. First of all, I'd like to let everybody know that we do have a strategic planning workshop later today. So I encourage all of you guys to attend if you'd like to participate. So we'll provide an update on where we are with that, as well as we will continue after this meeting with our outreach in the community and with our stakeholders to get input on the strategic plan. So if anybody would like to provide input, I highly encourage you to do so. Next, the People Division has 2 items on today's agenda for your consideration. First, we've been, as Commissioner Fitzgerald mentioned, we've been looking at the competitiveness of our compensation and benefits package to our employees over the past 2 years. So one of the things that we did at our last pension benefits meeting was present Mercer's benefit valuation report to kind of look at the strengths and opportunities that we have within our benefits program. Overall, the report found that we're very favorable with our medical and retiree medical programs. However, there were some areas of opportunity that we will continue to look at. One being our defined compensation plan, which is offered to new employees, as well as the contributions the support contributes for our dental plan, our life insurance plan, short-term disability, and vacation policies. So today, we would like to address some of the things with the health and welfare program, opportunities for enhancements, and we'll continue to look at our pension or our retirement plans and vacation policy in the future. So some of the changes that are addressed in item K1, we would like to propose offering employer-paid short-term disability for employees moving forward. This is an area that we found to not be competitive in. About 90% of employers in the area offer this as a benefit to employees as paid by the company. This would be people that are under maternity leave would be eligible for this program as well. And this would be a 60% salary displacement option. So like I said, it would cover maternity leave as part of that. Today, employees pay for that benefit. We also would like to propose enhancing the competitiveness of our dental benefit program by going to an employee funded from an employee funded benefit to a 50-50 cost share. So the court would pick up 50% and the employee would pick up 50%. Again, we found that that was more in line with what industry offers coming in for employees.
More in line with who?
With what other entities offer to employees coming in.
And this was all, we went through all this in the Pension and Benefits mm-hmm. Committee in massive detail.
Yes, yes. A couple others, more minor changes were switching our vision plan from Emeritus to Aetna because of the significant cost savings with that plan. That was a 19% reduction. That is employee paid, just to mention that. Increasing the maximums for basic life, AD&D, and long-term disability to be more in line with industry norms. There still is a cost savings to those that came out when we went out for proposals. And then for employee paid and voluntary benefits, we propose switching from Colonial to Allstate, as well as adding pet insurance for Nationwide, which was a recommendation by employees. Again, these are employee paid benefits, not port and played, but these are things that are offered. I do want to note that we'll be coming back with our recommendation next month for the medical self-funded program, which will be our TPA, which is our third-party administrator, stop-loss and claims RCAs. So that will be presented in October. And again, these were reviewed and recommended by the Pension and Benefits meeting. The second item on the agenda is Port Houston has created a new role that will be reporting to the executive director, which is a chief government and public relations officer. This role is going to be working directly with the commission and executive leadership team to collaborate with key partners at the federal, state, and local levels, which is very important for our Project 11 and also future endeavors. So we are recommending engaging an executive search firm to assist us with the identification and selection of this role, given its critical nature to the port. So we are requesting permission to move forward with that as well. And I am available to answer any questions.
Questions?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye on 1 and 2.
On 1 and 2.
Aye.
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 Okay. Port security, Marcus.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. It's been a busy couple months. Our fireboats have been out on at least 3 cases searching for missing people in the water, including the tragic case off Sylvan Beach. Our police department did some active shooter training and an exercise. We had Greenpeace in there, we talked about that. We had Imelda last week. Emergency management did a great job keeping everybody informed and communicating with our partners. But I think most importantly is in the midst of all that, the Coast Guard came out and did our annual inspections. We passed all 5 and can continue to operate. So that's good news there. So just wanted to bring all that to your attention. We've been extremely busy. Two very quick items on the agenda today for us. In October of 17, the Port Commission approved a 4-year hazmat response contract. It basically puts the contractor Oil Mop on standby. It was 2 years certain with the option for 2 more years. We're at that point now. We're requesting that we activate the option for the 2 more years. We have $85,000 left on our purchase order. We're not asking for any more money at this time. And the second item is an interlocal agreement with Morgan's Point. Annually, we enter into this agreement for law enforcement support. And because it is an interlocal agreement, it comes to the Port Commission for approval. I'll take any questions you may have.
Does this mean that Michelle Bechtel actually like arms himself and and patrols?
I was trying now. Not to look over that way, sir.
There we go. Okay, so, the motion's been made. Second.
I'll move 1 and 2.
Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, next is technology. Charles.
Morning, Chairman. Morning, Commissioners. It's always nice to be the last person on the agenda for the break. The technology division has only one agenda item. But prior to discussing that one minor item, I'd like to share some highlights real quick about cybersecurity as we prepare to enter October, which is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. This is our 3rd year in our program for cybersecurity awareness training for all port employees, and it is mandatory. The reason why I mention this is that all employees have until October 31st to complete this mandatory training. Secondly, with support from Bridget Elmore, the Grants Manager of Infrastructure, and prior Chief of PSCO Marcus, PHA has been awarded two port security grants in the amounts of $180,000 to extend our cybersecurity awareness training and for $600,000 to enhance our capabilities in cybersecurity, security incident and event management, which is a technical way of saying seeing what's happening to you in real time. The overall goal of these two grants is to help the Houston region as a whole by sharing what we see in our environment anonymously. Finally, that one item I mentioned at the beginning is for software renewal for support and maintenance. The software provides email archival, basic legal email discovery, and spam protection for the entire PHA email system. With that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
So moved.
Okay, good. Okay, great. We're going to then go into recess and go into executive session.
Do you want to take a break?
We're going to take a break first.
Good.
Yes.
The authority of Harris County, Texas will now convene a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meeting Act Government Code to conduct private consultation with attorneys, including consultation regarding PHA v. Louis Dreyfus Company, Export LLC, Dehaney v. PHA, proposed amendments to agreements legal services, Amy Lowe, Klein, Boyer Miller, Alan Hoagland, and Kenny Friedman, deliberate regarding real estate, including the disposition of Pelican Island property, Beltway 8, Barbara's Terminal, the Sydney properties, economic development negotiation incentives, employment evaluation of public officers and employees, including claims filed against public employees and security-related matters. The Court Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Is there anything, Mr. Branch?
Yes. Legal expenses. I move to authorize the Port Authority to amend its agreements for legal services with Amy Klein, Boria Miller, Alan Hoagland, and J. Kent Friedman on terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, ayes have it. We are now, next meeting is October 22nd, we'll move to adjourn the meeting.
Now, before you adjourn, I've got something I want to say.
Okay, yes, sir.
I want to say that the way the demonstration was handled by the county out there where these people were hanging off of that bridge was poorly handled. It's pathetic the way it was handled. I think they felt that it was okay to come out there and demonstrate for 24 hours. And they stayed out there until we finally got a hold of the Federals, and the FBI showed up and said, they're coming down now. 15 minutes later, they started taking them down. But had the Feds not got involved at 4 o'clock, I guess they'd have hung there all night. I don't know. But it had no business setting down a port like it did. I don't know what it cost us monetarily or the people up and down the port, but it's a tragic to let somebody pull that kind of stunt and nothing happen. They've been filed on, and I just hope that they're punished severely enough that they realize that they can't do that. That was well thought out demonstration, and now we should do a well thought out punishment. Was that? I just think it was poorly handled by the county and by the county sheriff.
I agree.
We all agree.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, good. All right. So we are now adjourned from the Port Commission meeting.